Today at Reader's Corner, Hampton Sides, author of In the Kingdom of Ice, The Grand and Terrible Polar Voyage of the USS Jeannette. I'm Bob Kustra. Welcome to Reader's Corner. On July 8, 1879, the USS Jeannette left San Francisco and sailed northward toward uncharted Arctic waters. Its ambitious destination, the North Pole, a place that had captured the imagination of 19th century scientists, explorers, and the public, but that remained shrouded in mystery and wild scientific speculation. If the expedition succeeded, the American ship and its crew would be the first to discover what really existed at the top of the world. It would be an understatement to say that things did not go smoothly. Hampton Sides tells this thrilling and harrowing true story in his book, In the Kingdom of Ice, The Grand and Terrible Polar Voyage of the USS Jeannette, and it's now out in paperback. On this Thanksgiving weekend, we're featuring an encore edition of our interview with Mr. Sides. He is an award-winning editor of Outside Magazine, a frequent contributor to National Geographic, and author of three best-selling histories. In the Kingdom of Ice was named a Best Book of the Year by USA Today, the Washington Post, and a number of other publications. Mr. Sides joins us by phone for this interview. Hampton Sides, welcome to Reader's Corner.
Hey there, good to be with you.
When I read In the Kingdom of Ice, I think the first thing that occurred to me is that I got really cold. I could feel my body temperature dropping as I started to read this story. Maybe we should start out with your telling us about this journey. I mentioned in the intro that things didn't go too smoothly. Tell us about this journey, how it started, and without giving away what happens to the principals in the story, at least somewhat how it ends.
Yeah, well, the voyage of the Jeannette was one of the very early American attempts on the North Pole. It was a U.S. Navy expedition, though it was funded entirely by a private citizen. It was an official American undertaking. They left from San Francisco. There were a lot of scientists and a lot of sort of pseudoscientists, I guess you'd say, who believed in the existence of this warm water basin at the top of the world. And I won't go into all the scientific reasons why they believed that, but this was an expedition to test that theory and to find a warm water current leading up through the Pacific, through the Bering Strait, that was supposed to feed into this warm water basin. So the captain, Captain DeLong, and his 32 men and their 40 dogs left from San Francisco and made a stop in Alaska, this new acquisition that we'd purchased from Russia, and then headed into unknown territory where they quickly, in September of 1879, became locked fast in the ice and began to drift slowly in the ice pack for 2 years. They grew gradually crazy from too much togetherness, I guess you'd say, but they had plenty of food. They had entertainments. They had an organ, an amazing library, cases and cases of Budweiser beer. They had Edison's lights on board, newly designed lights, and all sorts of amenities and inventions. But after 2 years of drifting in the ice, the enormous pressure of the ice pack finally squeezed the ship. And DeLong had only a few minutes to get some belongings out on the ice, and the ship sank to the bottom of the Arctic Ocean. So there you are, 33 men and their dogs and three open boats and just a few sparse belongings, and Captain DeLong has to decide what to do. And he decides to struggle over the ice in harness with all these belongings for the whole summer of 1881, heading in the direction of Siberia, the central Arctic coast of Siberia, about 1,000 miles away. And it's truly one of the great survival stories, one of the great stories of leadership and comradeship, certainly that I've ever encountered, as they make their way over the ice and towards open water and towards Siberia. But I don't really talk too much about what happens after that. It's one of those stories that you don't want to know precisely who lives and who dies and how it all goes down, because it's full of twists and turns, and it's a really gripping story, so I kind of leave it there.
Would I be correct in recollecting that one of the reasons we know so much about this story and how it ends is because of Herman Melville's relative who was on this ship?
Distant relative of Herman Melville was certainly one of the great heroes of this saga, George Melville. He was the engineer of the Jeannette and a heroic character in every sense of the word. He is one of the survivors and went on to write an enormous sort of anvil of a book called In the Lena Delta that was a best-selling book in its day. He then went on to become the chief engineer of the entire United States Navy and a rear admiral. So Melville, yes, Melville is one of the pivotal characters and one of the reasons, if anybody knows about this story, certainly it comes through Melville. Mm-hmm. But what I've found as I've traveled around the country talking about the book and meeting people is that prior to this book of mine, it was a story that most people had forgotten about and never heard of. And it's amazing to me that this expedition, which is every bit as gripping and sort of iconic and was every bit as important in its day as the Shackleton expedition to the South Pole was in its day. But the Shackleton expedition is quite well known, for example. People have heard of it and read about the Endurance and know that story. But this American story, for some combination of reasons, fell between the cracks. And really that's the reason when I first heard about it that I decided to write this book, was to try to elevate it to a status where I think it belongs.
I think you've said that the Russians know way more about this story than the Americans do, even though it's the USS Jeannette.
Yeah. When I went to Russia, I went to Siberia. I went to some islands off the coast of Siberia, and I went to the Lena Delta, where DeLong's men make landfall. Everywhere I went, and also in Moscow, people had heard of the Jeannette. The men of the Jeannette who survived were paraded around Moscow as heroes and paraded around St. Petersburg. They met the Tsar. It's just part of the lore of Russian history. And I would say definitely true that the Jeannette expedition is better known over there than it is here in the United States.
When I heard you give the presentation on In the Kingdom of the Ice, I think probably one of the funniest parts was your description of this gentleman. You referred to him earlier as a private citizen, and indeed he was a private citizen, but he was also, I believe, the editor or the publisher of the New York Herald, James Gordon Bennett, and some of the idiosyncrasies you bring back to this man's life. Very fascinating dude. Why don't you tell us a little bit about James Gordon Bennett?
Gordon Bennett is one of those outrageous Gilded Age spoiled brats who had a lot of money and pretty much got whatever he wanted. He was the third richest man in Manhattan. He had inherited this newspaper, which became the largest newspaper in the world, the New York Herald. He was a lover of spectacle and a lover of controversy. You know, it's impossible to exaggerate the extent of his eccentricities. He was into nude coach racing at midnight around Manhattan. He would stage these races and be completely nude. He was a very reckless but very, very, very courageous and very excellent sailor. And he won the first transatlantic yacht race. He became the youngest commodore of the New York Yacht Club. He introduced polo to the United States and ultimately tennis to the United States. He was a speed walker. But the other thing about him was he was always getting into drunken situations that were quite embarrassing. And he at one point urinated into a grand piano at a salon in New York and got himself ostracized from New York society. And this ultimately led to a flogging in the streets and then a duel. And then he eventually exiled himself to Paris, where he ran his newspaper via the transatlantic cable. So, you know, he's an interesting character who is important in the history of newspaper journalism. And he was interested, of course, in covering the news, but he also wanted his paper to kind of create spectacles that would generate more news. Most famously, he sent Henry Stanley as a journalist to Africa to find Livingston. And, you know, Livingston, I presume. And that series of dispatches was an enormous hit for his newspaper. And he was looking for an encore, really, to Livingston Stanley when he decided to bankroll an expedition to the North Pole to test the open polar sea theory. And he paid for everything and worked directly with the U.S. Navy in mounting this very ambitious expedition. So, you know, the problem with Bennett is, though, he's such a colorful character that he was in danger at times of upstaging the expedition. You know, I keep cutting back and forth between what's happening out on the ice and what's happening back in Paris and in New York with his various escapades.
I'm Bob Kustra, host of Reader's Corner. Today I'm speaking with Hampton Sides about his book, In the Kingdom of Ice, The True Story of a 19th Century Polar Expedition and the Great Challenges It Encountered. Well, George Washington DeLong is the captain of the ship. Tell us about the Navy captain who took this ship north.
I really became quite impressed by him and impressed with him. He had been to Greenland earlier in life and had become captivated by the North Country and had decided at an early age that he wanted to be the guy that was going to reach the North Pole first and, you know, do it for his Navy and do it for his country and also for science. He had read everything there was to read about the Arctic and was quite knowledgeable and talked to all the scientists of his day, prepared for every eventuality. And he also wrote extremely well and kept these journals every single day, no matter what was happening, no matter how things were going awry, and believe me, things went awry in every imaginable way. But nonetheless, he was always very disciplined about writing down what happened that day. And so, and to a large extent, this book is based on his journals, day by day, hour by hour, which he not only wrote every day, but when the ship sank, he rescued his journals and lugged them across the ice pack, across the Arctic Ocean, and across Siberia to end up in the National Archives in Washington. So the journals themselves took an amazing journey, and they are really the kind of the spine or the principal document of the book.
With the focus on climate change, I'm fascinated by the fact that DeLong brought this sophisticated scientific equipment along, some of which was used to monitor weather patterns. And I believe I heard you say in one of the presentations that to this day, that information is valuable for us because, of course, the comparisons between what they knew and what they discovered about the weather then and where we're going now.
Well, climate scientists today, you know, they can measure quite definitely what's the condition of the ice now. Their problem is they don't really have a very good baseline to compare to from 150 years ago. To do that, you'd have to, you know, lock yourself in the ice, drift for 2 years deep, deep, deep into the Arctic ice pack, and take daily and even hourly measurements of all the changing conditions. Who would do that? Right. Well, it turned out that Jeanette did that, and they took all of these amazingly precise measurements of, you know, barometric pressure and salinity and the thickness of the ice and the quality of the ice and the strength of the ice and the depth of the water and on and on it goes. And all of these entries, you know, tens and tens of thousands of entries piling up from all of these all this measurement over 2 years ended up in these logbooks, which were rescued as well. And although they were really very heavy and very cumbersome, they were dragged across the ice and across the ocean and across Siberia as well, just like DeLong's journals. So those books have been digitized by a group called Old Weather, and now NOAA scientists are poring over them and really using them as a baseline for trying to understand how fast and how, you know, to what extent the ice has changed or weakened in the intervening century and a half.
You couldn't take just any old 19th century ship up through the Arctic. How did DeLong manage to find what I believe was called the Pandora?
Yeah, well, it was originally called the Pandora. He found it in England. It had already acquitted itself very well in two trips to Greenland. And he and Bennett, I mean, Bennett paid for it, but DeLong purchased it and had it outfitted in France. He sailed it with his wife around the Horn to San Francisco. It was renamed the Jeannette after Gordon Bennett's sister Jeannette. In San Francisco, the U.S. Navy practically rebuilt it for the ice, massively reinforced it with, you know, bulkheads and lots of metal and sheathing, and they knew they were going to encounter enormous pressures in the ice. They hoped they would eventually find this open polar sea, but they knew they would have to bust through at least a month's worth of ice. It turned out to not be a month; it was 2 years. But the ship actually held up quite well for 2 years. But eventually, the pressures were just too great, and even though they had reinforced the ship so mightily, it still succumbed to the pressure.
I think you had some descriptions in the book about the crew living day to day with the noise created by this ice pressure.
Yeah. And this is something also that I didn't understand myself very well until I went on a trip for National Geographic up through the Bering Strait and into the ice pack on the way to a place called Wrangel Island off the northeast coast of Siberia. And several times we were halted, even though we were in a Russian icebreaker, we were halted by the ice. And I kind of had this notion of the ice pack being a more or less stationary, kind of monolithic thing. But when you get in the ice, you start to realize that it's constantly moving and churning and shuddering and shrieking and making all these strange sounds. And DeLong and his team are constantly referring to it and talking about how, you know, it's just like a constant force in their life. It's like this ice pack is alive, and it's constantly warring with itself and warring with the ship. And you know, it's just something they learned to live with. But it was pretty nerve-wracking because, you know, of course, the inference is always there that when you're hearing these shrieks and shudderings, is that the ship could be a victim, and ultimately, of course, was a victim of this ice.
So tell us about the possibility of a crew going back up there and trying to discover where the Jeannette went down, and you might be a part of that?
Some of them are NOAA scientists. Some are Russian scientists. There's some liaison members of the Russian Navy and also the U.S. Navy. And you know, our relationship with Russia right now is not very good, but this is actually something that all the relevant parties seem to agree on, that it would be great for science and for kind of our relationship with the Russians to mount an expedition. The idea would be to do it in August of next year and to mount an expedition to sort of follow in the wake of the Jeannette, go to some of the islands that they discovered in the Arctic Ocean. They're now known as the DeLong Islands, and also to find and photograph the wreck of the Jeannette, which is in Russian waters. We know almost precisely where it is because when it sank, DeLong took very accurate positional readings, and you know, possibly to bring up some relics from the ship. So that is a proposed expedition, which right now is sort of going through all the usual sorts of you know, vetting. Everyone's trying to figure out how we're going to pay for it, essentially, is what it boils down to. But we'll see. But that's my fervent hope and wish, is that I'll be on another Russian icebreaker come next summer.
You know, when I pick up a book at the bookstore and take it home to read, such as yours, I picture an author doing research in a library someplace or talking to a few people. And then I listen to you at the Sun Valley Writers Conference, and you're describing the extensive research, including all this travel to the Arctic, and also the surprise research that you found thanks to Catherine DeLong. You might want to tell us a little something about Emma DeLong, the captain's wife, who, of course, was left behind and had to wonder for all of these years what happened to her husband.
Right. Well, Emma DeLong, the wife of the commander, is a very important character in the story. She not only did she sail with her husband around the Horn, which was itself an almost 3-month voyage to San Francisco. She wanted to come for the whole expedition. She knew everything about that ship and was intimately involved in the planning of the expedition, which was pretty unusual in those times. But the other reason why she's a major character in the book is that she was an amazing writer. She wrote these beautiful letters And turned out that, you know, she lived a long life and saved everything. And they got passed down through the family. And when I was cold calling DeLong's, I'd heard there were some relatives in New England. I think it was about the 10th or 12th, you know, call, I found this Catherine DeLong, and she was a descendant of Emma DeLong, and she said she had this trunk in her attic that was full of letters, you know, old letters and notes and all kinds of stuff. She knew it was about the Jeanette, but she didn't know precisely what to do with it. She asked me if I'd come take it and, you know, try to understand it, and, you know, with the understanding that it would ultimately donate it to the Naval Academy Museum. Boy, howdy, what did I want to do that. You know, I got on the next plane I could get to Connecticut, and sure enough, they were the personal papers of Emma DeLong. She wrote these beautiful letters to her husband during the summer times, the three summers of this voyage, 1879, 1880, and 1881. And she sent them north by way of these Arctic whaling vessels in the hope that they would reach her husband. And as the years go by, these letters become more and more urgent and worried, but also more and more beautiful and haunting to read. And so her letters really become a big part of the book. I just quote them at length throughout. And you get a real sense of their relationship and, you know, the worry that all of these commanders' wives had back then. I mean, you know, when they left port, they were not heard from again. You know, we have to remind ourselves there was no form of communication, and she had no idea where her husband was or what his fate was as the months and years go by.
You're listening to Reader's Corner. My guest today is Hampton Sides, author of In the Kingdom of Ice, The Grand and Terrible Polar Voyage of the USS Jeanette. When the crew was finding its way across the ice, they encountered native tribes. What role did they play?
Well, they were extremely important. First of all, they did get two hunters in Alaska that came on board the ship with dogs, and those two characters played a really important role as hunters and dog drivers. And, you know, credit DeLong, he was someone who was very aware of the Inuit and Native knowledge of the Arctic, and many other commanders were quite patronizing. DeLong tapped into their knowledge and really wanted to understand what they knew about how to get along and how to survive in those extreme conditions. When they made landfall in 1881 in Siberia, I won't tell you who lives and who dies and exactly how it goes down, but they are ultimately found by a tribe called the Yakuts, a very different kind of tribe. They're not Eskimo. They're actually, they look very much like and sort of genetically related to the Mongols, but they speak a Turkish language. So the Yakuts plays a key role in rescuing the expedition and getting them to safety.
At the very end, when this crew comes back to New York City, how did America react? Was America well aware during this time that these guys were missing? Was this CNN news in the late 19th century without CNN?
It absolutely was. And, you know, obviously Bennett's newspaper, The Herald, covered it very closely, but all the newspapers did. They were household names. There were parades. There were monuments. There were statues erected. There were best-selling books. There was a naval inquiry. There was a very controversial and interesting congressional hearing. You know, it was news for years as more and more knowledge of the expedition unfolded, and relics were found in the Arctic and so forth. You know, I mean, that's one of the reasons perhaps why it's not as well known today, is that throughout the 1880s and into even the early 1890s, there was just so many books and so much interest in this expedition. And, you know, sort of in a way it flared out or burnt out, I think. You know, you can definitely say that Gordon Bennett got his blockbuster story and then some, because this thing generated, you know, hundreds of articles for his papers. And, you know, these men were celebrated as heroes and you know, martyrs, those who died as martyrs to science, and you know, their celebrated on the grounds today of the Naval Academy, but they're not very well known today outside of Annapolis.
The relentless cold and the lack of food, the incredible distances they had to travel, it just seems like such a pessimistic encounter, and yet there was always this optimism that tomorrow was going to be a better day. Is that DeLong's leadership? Is this the story of leadership in addition to everything else it is?
I absolutely think so. I mean, you know, that struggle over the ice pack, it took 92 days of just excruciating effort, and he organized it extremely well. He broke the group into three smaller groups, which he kind of had competing against each other to create a kind of a more intimate camaraderie. Each of those groups had a leader, and so he sort of was delegating authority in that way. All the minute decisions that he made, and you know, some mistakes that he made, but by and large, he held this thing together.
Hampton, I understand that you're certainly interested in projects that test the metal, and so you're working on one now that has to do with the Korean War. Tell us about that, and my gosh, are you going to find your way into North Korea?
I'd like to go to North Korea if I can, because the battle that I'm writing about, which is the Battle of Chosin Reservoir, is in North Korea. I don't particularly want to, you know, do hard labor for 12 years. I don't want to take any stupid risks. But if I can go in with an official group or something like this, I mean, I just want to see the battlefield and walk it. It is one of the most harrowing and I think one of the most heroic battles in American military history. And I won't go into all the details, but it's early in the war when the Chinese have first entered without our knowledge, and suddenly a small group of Marines, about 10,000 or so, are surrounded by about 100,000 Chinese soldiers, and it's actually a retreat. It's an armed and fighting retreat because they were going to be wiped out otherwise, and it took place in 20 below weather. For much of the time, so I guess you could say I'm in my cold my cold period,
right, exactly.
As a writer. It's my new project. I'm really excited about it. I've just started. I'm still interviewing and meeting veterans, and I'm just having a ball with it. So you know, that's the new project.
Well, we look forward to the new project, but in the meantime, I urge our listeners to grab a copy of a really exciting book. Reads like a novel, and we didn't give anything away today, so you'll really enjoy In the Kingdom of Ice, The Grand and Terrible Polar Voyage of the USS Jeanette by Hampton Sides. Hampton, thanks so much for joining us today at Reader's Corner.
Real pleasure being with you. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this encore edition of our interview with Hampton Sides. Next week, A.J. Beam, author of The Arsenal of Democracy, FDR, Detroit, and an Epic Quest to Arm an America at War. Reader's Corner is presented by Boise State Public Radio. The engineer for today's show is Eric Jones. Research by Deborah Palmer. Our producer is Janelle Brown. I'm Bob Kustra. Please join me next week as we talk to today's leading writers about the ideas and issues that help shape our world at Reader's Corner. To listen to our show anytime, download our free player from the iTunes App Store. Search for Reader's Corner. Thank you.